Welcome to the Manitoba Ag Days podcast, where we hear from some of the most relevant, up-to-date, informational speakers in our industry. In episode 3, Florian Hagman from Top Crop Fertilizers shares his story. 100 bushel canola yield. Little things matter.
Good morning, everyone. I'm really thankful to be here and try to just share my experience, what I do on my farm. And I would like to say I'm not a better farmer than anybody else. It's just what I try. I try just a percentage of my farm, probably a third of my farm. I try to do a little trial and try to improve my yield and to see what works. And I found out there's little things that matters, and so I'll go over with that. So yeah, I'm in British Saskatchewan, so I'm very fortunate. I'm blessed. We kind of got some good land, so it's according to crop insurance, it's Class A, Class B, and C. That's the most general of my land. So it's a black soil that got lots of humus in it and good energy and stores some good amount of water. Especially last year when we had just a lower precipitation or less rain, so than normal. But and through the years, like I got in twos. Like the first in 2012, we had a little with our seed rep. We had a little canola challenge with so I got in twos on that. In 2012, we did a little challenge and we went to 52 bushel an acre. 2013, so I went to 84 bushel an acre, so which was pretty amazing. But I had a desire to try to push and get some higher, see what we could maximize on what we have. And 2014, unfortunately, I was drawn out, so with a high amount of rain, and so it didn't pan out because half of the field that I was doing some trial, they were flooded out, so they didn't pan out really good. And 2015, it was a better year, so I had good success, and it went to the crop, and it went to 116 bushel on that plot, 116 bushel like when we weighed it. But after we did the average of the field, it was 111 bushel. So I was thankful for that. And in 2016, we did another trial, and that's kind of. But on those programs, I went to 92 bushel. So I think the yield potential is there. I think it's achievable. So, and last year, 2017, we had lots of trials, and we had one 500 acre field that went over 90 some bushel average on the weight. The friend when they picked the swath and they weighed it was 99 bushel, and we had on another 800 acre field. We on the way was 100 some bushel again, so but the field average about 92 in the main drive. So the Canola Council goal 225 50 bushel average yield. I really believe it's a reality. So the genetic is there. If we feed it, feed or provide the nutrient accordingly, it's possible. So I have no doubt about it, and we there. So 52 is as long more than that true cup rate, and we got the rain and the moisture as well. So on those lists, I'll come what I do on those little things matters. So I like every year, like on my acres, I do a selection of field, and I do soil testing on every field, so which I believe is really important. We have to do it. So it just gives us a base to start, and it's just the key to start. You know, like I'm not an agronomist, I just think I'm talking as a farmer, and that's the principle that I believe we're important. So when I selection a field, so if I got I can target all my field 100 bushel or high yield, because first a selection as a mystery. So I know which quarter to the passage tree they provide me better yield, so maybe soil structure or estuary. So I know some all you guys, you got some field that quarter that produce better than other. So I try to selection those quarters, and I know on those quarters I have an estuary built. not so that I have probably an edge, always above average or above average on the farm. So that's the field that I will target to work with. And the first thing I believe, when I like to see in an hybrid with high yield potential. So I believe there's lots in the market, lots of high yield hybrid with a high yield potential. But there's some are lower than others. Like I'm fortunate. I got one of my family that he's a crop geneticist from Europe, and he told me that the yield potential on the kernel pound could be up to 250 bushels. So it's there. But some got a yield potential probably up to 160 bushels, some up 200. So depending the maturity, the length. So I try to pick on those fields to pick a high yield potential hybrid. For sure, I need a Bluebent insecticide, as a seed treatment to prevent me from bee beetle attack or all those things. So because if I got a bee beetle attack, I don't have enough plant for square foot, so half of my crop is kind of loose. So I try, and if you got question on the goal, please ask me a couple questions. So I'm not a big speaker, but I just pleased to share what I do on my farm. So I like to set, like I selection my field. I like to set a yield target for those fields. So I got couple quarter. I know they got a good yield potential with my good hybrid, the basic on there. So I try to target 80 bushel or some 60 bushel, depending on the economy and the history. And I evaluate the nutrient demand according to that target. So I do it like some guys. You guys got all the agronomists or all lots of help, or you retailers that could help you to do that. But I like to do it myself on my farm. Yes, I do have lots of help from my retailers and lots of help from the kernel council. I like to gather as much information as I can. To help me out. So I evaluate the nutrient already in the soil. But the way I evaluate the nutrient in the soil, I try to, it's my bank. So it's what we have, but on canola, on my crop, it's kind of main cash crop. So I don't mind to invest a little bit more, and when I follow up on my rotation on wheat later on, I don't like my oats crop or stuff. It's a less demanding crop, so I really more want to have in the soil for the following year. But on my canola crop, so it's my cash crop. I don't mind to invest and use it as the soil builder that I don't want. I don't want to mine the soil and I want to make sure it's all the nutrients are ready for there. And I evaluate the moisture in the spring, so that's a big concern. Like if I have a target of 80 bushel or a high target, and I don't have the moisture in the soil, most likely I won't achieve it, or most likely I don't know the future, so I won't invest probably that for that 80 bushel crop right off the bat, because I might not have a return in the future, of course. So how I translate that information and put it to action? So my, for sure, a CD rate is really, it's really important. So my target on my CD, I like to have at least 10 plants per square foot, because if you demand more yield target and you demand more yield, you need to have the plant. So you can't just have one plant, or some farmer told me 10 square foot is more than enough, but I believe on my farm, I need to have the seed population, the plant population, and also the target, the plant pot need to be there. So, and fertilizer placement, like our previous speaker was talking about, seed placement, so it's really important. So we need to try to have all those nutrients as well to the roots, because root doesn't have a brain. It's not like a snake that will go find this, you know, it'll grow and bump into it. So this is how I see it, and I'll go more in detail on that. So as I will talk about my plan, how I do it. So what the application of fertilizer at seeding. So the application, I like to have a base at seeding, a base source of nutrient right below the seed, right with the seed. When the seed starts to germinate, it's there. So I like to but I have to watch to not to over apply it to have seed burn or seed damage and those things. So that's a factor. But this will come back. I'll share my plan what I do in my field. So I'll come back to that. And I really believe a split application during the growing season. So it gave me. I know I got a base to start. It gave me a period to adjust according to moisture and what I could do to the growing season is there, the moisture is there, I have a good plan, so I don't mind to invest a little bit more because I will see that I will have a crop coming up, you know. So I won't apply for color crop they call that every bushel needs 2 pounds of N. So if you target 2 to 3 pounds, if you target 80 bushels, so that would translate to 240 pounds of N. So maybe I won't. I don't have the moisture. I don't do it all in this at seeding time. So I'll stagger it for a period of time, and that way I don't burn the bank, you know, because in the fall I got to pay the bill, you know. So it's hard. And I do an herbicide and a little foliar program, which I believe that helped for my plant health and stimulate a little bit the plant, you know. But it's a combination of every piece of the puzzle. So it's not just I just do a little bit in the spring, a little bit amount of nitrogen, and I've tried to do foliar. No, that's you still to apply the nutrient because the demand is there. So I'll go ahead and I'll tell you what I usually on those special field. I started with target or baby bushel because that's the one I want to push the yield. So I should have, but I use a combination. Like last year was a wet year, and I was not able to start seeding, so I had to do a little spring cultivation just to dry up the land. And at that time, my what I applied, the total nutrient I applied for that crop on that soil, let's see, maybe to be on to talk on the start. So on that soil, I had an organic matter of 7.8 to 8.2. So which every pound or every percent of organic matter, if you do have a good condition and the condition all right, it could release up to 10 pounds of nitrogen per percent of organic matter. So and the total nutrient for that 500 acres field that I applied, but on total nutrient I applied 173 pounds of nitrogen, 55 pounds of phosphorus, and 30 pounds of potassium and 68 pounds of sulfur. So the sulfur is a little bit higher than the Crop Council talk, but some I use it. It's an elemental sulfur, so it's not usable all the first year. So it's pretty close when you break did a little four-year program. It's if you put Delta on nitrogen or on nutriment, so it's a 8-16-1-1. So it's not really much. So what I did on my green cultivation, so I applied some a blend, so it was 69 pound of N and 20 P and 9 sulfur, so in the soil. So, and I did that pre cultivation on my cultivation, you know, because I had to split my amount of phosphorus, because I can't put it all with the seed, because it will be too high, 55 pounds, so I could have seed damage and seed burn. So, and actually it was 140 pounds of VSN and 60 pounds of S15. So that's the total nutrient, you know, the blend. So, but at seeding time, I apply if you go with the nutrient, it's a 629-46. That's what's right below the seed. I use part of a dry fertilizer and an autophos liquid phos. So what I did, it's a 6 gallons, 624-6, and I applied 2 gallons of 25-17, a little bit of potassium and sulfur, which it was really important, and that I feel on my farm, and 40 pounds of S15. So I don't try to apply more than a total of too much sulfur in the seed row will start to create some seed burn. So I just like it on my farm to pour 40 pounds of S15 in the seed row. And I use a sideband liquid. It was another sideband. It was 70, because this was 72 pounds of nitrogen and 26 sulfur. So 10 gallons of ATS and 50 gallons, 28 liters. And what with that ATS, because it's just a sideline an inch away, just to prevent a little bit of seed burn, and I apply a little bit of liquid humic, so just to buffer the salt and against that fertilizer at that time. So this is kind of how I split. So now coming up, you know, I had a good emergence. You know, I had up close to my target, over 10 plants per square feet, and it's pretty good high population. But it was all the moisture was fertile, and the plant growth that puts up some moisture, and it really helped. So it really make me feel confident. So even if it was one rain, so it was kind of like an average plan, you know. So still could carry me through and maybe give enough nutriment for a 60 bushel crop. But after you do the herbicide time, so I went with glyphosate and the recommended rate and just a little bit of foliar with it, 2 liters of slow release nitrogen, which against against my herbicide, and give a little boost on the fields, on that stress of the root zone. So just to help to carry it too. And after that, I went and the conditions were really good. So I had good. We had 2 inches of rain during that time, so I feel I had a good moisture. So I went and I applied some ATS after that and a little bit of nitrogen, because try to on a dribble. So I went dribble later on. So it was probably close to 50 days after the seeding date, and I went dribble, not quite 40, 60 days. I went dribble a little bit more nutriment, and I went dribble some blend. It was 24, 10, 5, 26. So it was a mix of 10 gallons of ATS 12-0-26 and 4 gallons of 28-0. So a total of 14 gallons. So that's what I did. So and there was a good uptake right away, because I like that. I mean, tart sulfate, because it's quickly direct to the translate to the pick it up. So following that, I went to another pass of herbicide and I apply a little bit more. I apply my glyphosate and I did a little foliar. So a little foliar. So it's a 20% nitrogen and 7% potassium and 5 sulfur. I did 2 gallons. So, but that's part of the of my foliar plan. And so it gave a little boost, you know. So because a high demanding crop, I translate or high yield. I translate like I was from the dairy background, so I used to have a dairy farm in Eastern Canada. So we were going for a production of 7,000 kg of milk per cow per year to a 12,000 kg of milk average per year. But how we have to do it, we have to split the application so we can give all in once and expect. So I just like to stage my nutrient demand. So and following that, so I did at my 10% flour, I use a nitrogen and a chloride and a phos. So because I like to give as much nutrient, not lots of phos and a chloride, just for plant health. And if the plant got lots of energy, you got all the nutrients demand, you could fight a lot of those fungal attack myself, you know, because the plant is strong, you got all its energy. So it's, and with a base of chloride, which most of all the fungicides, the main active ingredient they got into it is chloride. So which it helps very much. So what I did after that, that was my 10% flour. So it's kind of plant health at that stage. And after, when I had 10% flour left, because usually I do another foliar application at that stage. I did for those high yield field, and I went with they call it 17% nitrogen and an 8% chloride, and with a foliar phos, so because it helps to work on that, because we got a high demand of phos when it's spotting stage. That's why half of your demand of phos is at spotting stage to fill the seed, so a good percentage. So I like to give, because sometimes one of the reasons it was getting drier, and I was getting worried that not all my phos I bought and sold, maybe the roots won't take it all, so I did a little bit of foliar just to help at that stage. So, yeah. So that was my program. So when I evaluate my field, you know, so I got that little 4R nutriment pocket book, you know, a guide. That's the one I was using on my farm. That's the one I used. It's the 4R. Stewardship nutriment guide, you know, it's a little guide. I have it somewhere here, but I can show you. That's the one I like to make. So that's what they were demanding. So for an 80% crop, so you need 1.9, which is very low. But I think I could achieve 1.9 pound time 80 bushels, so 152 bushels, 152 pound of nitrogen. The cost is 1.2, 96, like canola is a high demanding demand a lot of phos, so you need to provide it. So I could do it with a smaller blend, but I believe that my foliar will help a little bit. So because it could be like we're coming back. I got another slide that University of Davis can tell is that 1 pound of leaf could help a higher percentage than in the soil. So and I got my potassium. But my soil was really rich in potassium, so it's over that 80 part per million. That's pretty high, top 200, so it's pretty high. And my sulfur, it was 1.2, so I believe a little bit higher, but so that's what I did. So I believe the only way to achieve those yields too, is to good soil health, you know. So I like humidity in the soil. So in the fall, I broadcast some yield mate, or in the spring. So just to increase my microbiality and having making more detrimental for the crop. So that's the little benefit. So increase my crop population in the soil, improve the soil aeration. That's what I feel, and increase emergence. So it's little things that it's not, it helps. So, and my efficient use of fertilizers. So it's the seed placement is really important. I like the low starter autophosphate, right below the seed, just to get it up and going, versus a dry that take a longer period to break down or to be able to on the cold soil. So, and I try to minimize my nitrogen loss. So why I try to do it, so I like to use stagger a little bit my nutrient demand. So I don't, I try for the years to apply my nutrient in the fall, but I believe that it could be 20% less effective, or you need 20% more. So that's on my farm, that's what I found out. So and split application of the nitrogen, so that's part of the success, and the foliar feeding. So that's, and that's a little chart there that we have, that's from the University of California, Davis, you know, so tell. But the nitrogen, you know, it's 4 to 12, but on my soil, it's a high organic matter soil, so it's probably lower, it's not on that 4, but the TNS, so it helps a little bit, so it's there. So my plant health is really important. So it's something I monitor, and I monitor with my retailer. So because we have a good healthy balance program. So that's what I feel on my farm. So every farm are different. You guys know your farm better than anybody else. You know your history on your field. You know through the years which field produce more than other. So you need to have the phosphate goals for the plant. You need to give the energy to the plant, the nitrogen at the right time. And so sometimes if we, I had the opportunity to see many producers to all Western Canada. So I go and talk to many farmers and come see farmers from up to the Peace River country, up to Manitoba, southern Manitoba. Sometimes if you apply too much of one nutrient, it's unbalanced, like too much nitrogen, you don't have your P, you don't have your potassium, you might enhance one fungi, you know, because the plant is lacking. It's like you're lacking of one vitamin or something, you know, you can't fight it, you know, so or lacking one part of energy, you have too much fat. I'm just talking as a farmer, like a, you know, make a sample for to understand. So, and a good adobe field, the nutriment from the soil. My family, they are in the farm machinery business. So we sell lots of precision equipment, lots of different you know, technology things. And one thing I have always a hard time, and I'll tell you, like applying some nitrogen or nutrient too far from the seed. Yes, it's safe, but you maybe have the use probably at 30 or 40% of that. So and we did trials on a farm, and with different pieces of equipment, we could have the most modern equipment, but it's like, I'm talking as a farmer, sorry about the term, it's like you don't try to feed a pig on the other side of the truck. So if you have the nitrogen, like you 12-inch spacing, 15-inch spacing, and you apply your nitrogen 6-7 inches away, yes, but just a part of the root will access of that nitrogen. Not all of it, because we did try, and we have my father-in-law is that he was one of the biggest farmer dealers in Western Canada, and we were doing trials, we're doing a side band closer as long as it's buffered. Your seed toxicity, your nitrogen or your fertilizer toxicity, we see a better response with a smaller amount just because it was closer to the seed and the plant could have access to it. So, but for seed safety, if you go a high rate, you know, like for higher crop, yeah, yes, further away, we believe it's more seed safe than if you put too close because you have seed burn, root burn, and toxicity that will injure your crop. So, but that's why I like my split application and having pretty close succession and a little bit foliar feeding. And actually now, I did convince, and he's doing all his farm that way, and he's used to. He was the top seller on those further away side banding. So just tell you that the fertilizer placement is really important. So that, but it's everybody like to have it quickly done and quickly made, but I could guarantee that. That it won't happen. So it's to achieve a higher yield. It's a little bit harder work. And on my farm, I'm blessed that I got my brother that he don't mind to do and go into the sprayer, do those split application. But it's an extra management that demand quite a bit more from you guys. But at the end, it paid off. So it really so. And a good collaboration of Mother Nature. So if you don't have the moisture, you don't have the reserve in the soil, it just won't happen. So that basically that's covered it. But if you guys could calculate the cost, but I did have it. So that's I like to. It's always the cost if a good crop paid off or if this thing paid off, but I didn't. By the way, this was just a little guide that I used, so I don't know, but that's the one I use on my farm. So, I like because always the economic, what you get off of it. So, but on my blend, like I talked before, my blend that I did applying in the soil, it was 173 pound of N and 55 P and 13 potassium and 68 sulfur. So yes, it's a cost. It's a cost, you know, it's with a slow and a DSN, it's a little bit more, my cost was $178 an acre for that fertilizer. And my foliar program was close to that $42. But the foliar program, it was applying four gallons of product with a, so this is the cost. But I see that foliar program kind of an insurance and kind of my plant health. So it's not really much more than two paths of fungicide or this. But the last year and the last couple of years, that's what I've been doing, been working for me. But it's still we have to monitor the field and know the issue. So really, if you see it, I've been able to, I've been blessed, I've been able to see that I'm, you know, sclerotinia, so you'll see a little mushroom in the field, or so kind of some infection, you know. So it was really that bad. Well, maybe you have to monitor to get a fungicide. So, but and a little bit of humulate product, so it was on that $10. So I was really at that $237. My input for as a cost at that stage, and after my seed, you know, so it's just a good hybrid, you know, that high yield potential, at least $50 per acre, so your seed cost 10 pounds, you know, with a good seed treatment. And after my herbicides, you know, it's that $10 to $20. But one thing I make sure when I do my herbicide, I always like to, because I'm on a tight rotation, so some field is every 3 years, canola, and some years is every second year, so. So it's pretty tight. So I have to manage the volunteer. So I use some Bromoxil mixed with my glyphosate at pre-seeding. So just to monitor, take control of the volunteer. So that was close to a cost of 290 $292. That was the import cost. But after that, you base your fixed costs, you know, like at $200 an acre, you know, cost of the land. If you don't farm it, you could rent it out and give you an income, you know, and your machinery costs. So I had a close to a total cost, you know, of that $500 an acre for that crop, you know, for that 80 bushel. Versus I do another part because it's as I get more profitable through the years, I'll do more and more of my acres that way. But I don't do 100% because if a bad luck something happened or you have a drought, you know, you hold lots of money, so you know you don't want to be and if I do like on a 50 bushel target cost. Yes, I drop my input costs, you know, because I'll drop my nitrogen like 120 pounds a gallon or quite a bit. You know, drop a little bit because you got a high demand. The law of physics: what you take out, you got to put it in. So you can you'll get by maybe a high yield 1 year, but after you know you got to maintain the level high on the soil, you know, so because you got lots of uptake coming out of that. So on a base program will be probably that you know, seed and everything. Yes, it will be probably at mine. I had figured out to drop from 178 because you apply less. You drop to 110, 120 input costs plus your fixed costs $200. So that drop you up around that 378. So, you know, we could do target input costs, fixed costs to grow that crop. But you do have just probably an average yield 50, you know, 50 or less. But that will just cost you about $500 an acre. So the next gain, the gain we have for future expansion or whatever, it's just $180-some. Or even less, you know, that you walk off, you know, versus a higher crop. I didn't invest a little more, but when you do a 90 bushel crop, so it will give you close to $1,000 gross. So, but my input was probably $100 more an acre, but I walk out with a benefit of close to $300 extra. So on a quarter section, it translates a big difference versus $16,000 gross. You know, 16 or whatever, versus 48,000 gross income in that quarter. So that's, you know, we need, as it comes to, in the future, we'll need to do something to create more bushel to try to keep us on the farm. So it's, I guess we have to demand a higher target. And yes, we'll have to invest a little bit more. But at the end of the day, you'll have the return. So, but as long, what I would recommend, take home, so try to manage your risk, split your application, you know, and give you some time to gauge the demand, you know, go from there. So, yeah, so that's what I have to talk, you know, and if you guys got some question or something, you know, to like let me know. So, thank you.
Great. Thank you so much, Florian. We do have some time for questions, and I'm sure, there we go. I was pretty sure we'd have some questions this round. What kind of a cedar are you using?
Well, I had the occasion, like, I use no fancy new machinery. I just use a flexicola, the 5,000 air drill with a good opener and sideband. That's what I use here. That's what I used last year. And I've been using, I have a good opportunity. I have a lot of new. I try many good companies. The new one up to the Tech Seamaster or up to the Tech Virgo drill, the top. But really what I found out, if you could have the good seed placement and the good fertilizer placement and the right ingredient at the right time, that's the key to success. Like I say, my brother-in-law, and my family, the Vietnam Farm Machinery dealership. And we have those covers on table all the time. But at the end of the day, the equipment will just give you a small part of your crop yield. We'll help you to make you more efficient, do more acres. But really, really, to if you could have the right seed placement and the right fertilizer placement, that's the key to success. It's not as you can have a brand new drill, that brand, but it won't help you to achieve the highest yield. I can tell you deep. And I saw it, and we try all the new drill in the market. So yes, it helped. It helped to be more efficient, to do more acres every day. But at the end of the day, even if you talk to all, I have the opportunity to talk to all the top corn growers around the world, you know, so in the state. Really, the equipment will just give you a small part. It's the nutriment, you know, it's like, I like to train, if you have the right ingredient, we'll make you the right recipe. We'll cook you the good cake or the good. But really, if you got brand new pot and pan in your kitchen, and you don't have the right ingredient, you have higher expense, and you won't have the return. So it's just how it is. Like honestly, like we go with a $10,000 drill. We produce higher yield than a 500,000 if you use the right ingredient and you've got all those nutrients as well to the crop and you got your soil working for you. This is the key of success. So yeah, my inputs are a bit higher. I use more ingredient, but my machinery cost is minimal. I used to have the top equipment but. Through the year, I found out that's not giving nothing in my pocket. If I count the depreciation, I count all those things. So really, you could do it with a 20-year-old drill or 30-year-old drill. I see. I got the opportunity to go all over Western Canada, and most of the top healing, they don't have the fancy tractor. They don't have the fancy piece of equipment. But it just those little details, you know. So if you take time to select your field, take time to select your fertility program, that's what helps, you know. I see it. I'm convinced. So just. The disc and one. Okay, well, I use a 3/4 inch opener, so that's what I use, and a side vent, so it will give you a 2-inch opener. So, but if you could buffer the toxicity of that fertilizer, that's the main ingredient. So, yeah. What's that? Yeah, that's right. Yeah, thanks. Yeah.
Question up here. Fungicide?
Fungicide. We monitor very, very closely. The last couple of years, I had good healthy program, good healthy soil, and I had lots of good nutrient uptake. Really, a commercial fungicide I didn't use. So I just use a good foliar program, which is part of my plant health. But you have to monitor. Okay, I don't tell not to use it, but this has been working for me. So, but and fungicide, like if you see you got a heavy precipitation, lots of rain coming out, it's wet all the time. You might have to do something. But through the years, there's so many products in the market, and I. There's a few that's close as a plant health that helps.
Other questions? We still have time. Oh, on top there, yeah.
So
we need tissue tests. We'll just repeat the question there.
Yes, we try to do some tissue tests, you know, even when my side banding or my split application, it helps, you know, so I do, and I... let's see, I'm missing something. It's part of the, that I should have mentioned that, but it's part that I would recommend you guys to do. But what I found out with the PC test, it gave me a snap of the day, but maybe tomorrow it might change, or in the 2 or 3 days. So it's like not 100% accurate, like what you have in the soil. So.
Great. Another question? Oh, looking over this way, yeah. Sean.
You spoke of quite a few applications through the year. Are they all blanket applications, or have you done any variable rate work, or what are your thoughts on variable rating across your field? And what do you see for as far as variability in your yield across your field?
Oh, the variable rate, it's I have some. My brother-in-law is doing on his farm. I don't have the equipment to do it all. I could do it with my sprayer. I see it's if you remediate a lower area that's lacking of because there's so much variance in the field, it'll be a key of success for to get capitalized every acres you have, and just to improve that zone or this thing, and some zone you might have too much nitrogen, so keep. It could help you to not over apply at that place and put less a different area. In the future, I'd like to do that more if I can. So but that will be a good thing I like to invest in the future on my farm. I do have some pretty field with good drainage, pretty. When we do the soil test, we do per zone, and it's pretty even. So I don't have as much variation in other place. So, but yeah.
Great, thanks, Florian. Other questions? Somebody over here? Someone right here? Yeah. Down in front. Just one sec. Just repeat it here. The question was, I was wondering if Florian had time in the farm that the lower yields are more economical than the higher yields.
Sorry. I got the.
I was just wondering if you had ever had times in your farm that your lower yielding canola is actually more economical than your higher yielding canola.
Yes. I do. My lower yield area. Actually, it was less economical than the higher yield area, but quite a bit less, because you still have the same fixed costs, your land costs, you do have your machinery costs and labor costs. It's a little bit less labor cost. It's easier to do the commercial way. It's more piece of. I don't say peace of mind, but it's just it's simple, so you just see it and you do and you apply. But really, it's not that. It's well, now we're talking. I was talking probably than a regular, so three more applications. That's more demanding. That's more costly. But at the end of the day, it was quite a bit more profitable. To push, but like coming back, my low conventional, traditional, you base with a conventional program and you add on, if you got the moisture to see if to get the gain. That's what I do. I don't know if I could answer your question, but there was more return.
On average, about how many pounds of seed, canola seed, would you use per acre?
The pound per seed, I like to have a target of 10 plants per square feet. There's a mortality rate. I see 5 pounds, so I haven't to actually that. Probably a mortality rate is 30, 40, and after, you know, so that's what I like. Yeah. Oh, pound? Oh, it's 5 pounds. Yeah, 5 pounds. I like to Yeah, but there's every seed are different, you know, from bushel, but at least that's an average.
Ideal seeding depth.
Well, it's I see it half an inch as long as the seeds on the moisture, but as not too deep either, you know. But I put in moisture half an inch to 3/4 inch, like yeah.
Do you straight cut?
No, I didn't straight cut anything, so it's probably in the main future. But I got all my family helping me, and I don't have straight cut headers, so I just swap. One thing I found out when you got all that high biomass and all that high plant, you know, and lots of seed in the plant. I'm worried a little bit of straight cut, so I could have some shelling and grain loss, because it's a bigger plant, and you got it's a little bit harder to swap, you know. So I'll put it that way, then. So that's, I'm scared a little bit.
Question up here. Just give me a second.
How do you control lodging?
How do you control lodging? It's with a high good population, so that's helped, because they don't at least a plant per square feet. You know, it's just you don't grow trees and trees. Don't get me wrong; it's a good size plant. So far there's a little bit of lodging. Don't take me wrong, but it's been manageable so up to for the last couple of years. One thing you have to do, I try to go swap a corona when I 60% color change, but I got some time. I got to be a little bit earlier because the lodging and the swap, I have some grain loss. And having the potassium and seeing the keeping the plant healthy stand pretty good. And I tried to select an hybrid that with a good standard is not too high, but you know, it's just that those things help with the genetic, it helped quite a bit also. So.
Other questions?
Yeah, I have two questions. What row spacing are you using in your drill?
9 inch.
And how big of a swather are you using?
How big?
How wide is your swather?
How wide my swather is a 30 foot. I used to, it's just because you go through so much material, so I try with 30, 40 foot. I can, it's just in my world, but it's huge swath. So I'm not kidding, but the swath is probably up to my neck, so. There's lots of material to go through, so there's some product and this thing. So it's everything we've been done. It's everything been video and everything, so you could see. Like I said, it's not two things. I don't take any credit on that one. It's just you got lots of material. So because you got a good plant population, lots of product to go through.
The follow-up questions, really? Thank you. Follow-up question down front here. What do you do for harvest loss management?
Harvest loss management? Well, we try to keep it as much as we can in the combine. harvest loss management, it's like combining regular canola or everything. Like it's just you have to go slow. You got to adjust your wind and kind of set the combine right, you know, but that's the main key, it's a struggle, you know, it's a struggle. So.
We've seen some articles lately about drop pans. Do you use a drop pan? Do you
yes,
check
I
what's
do.
Coming out the back of
yes,
the
I do
combine?
Use a drop pan, you know, and chaff, you know, and I do all those things, yeah, yeah, but sometimes you got to go, and you combine, but only combine so much, and you got to lessen your combine what she does, you know.
What kind of combine is handling 100 bushel crop?
Well, they all can combine, so what I use, I do have some Massey and Greener, and I do have some Cross combine. So, yeah, I need a good combine power because I'm not kidding, but we have to do some field just to manage the loss and things. You cannot go more than one tree, depending on the size of the combine, 3 miles an hour, that would be the max that we go on a 30-foot swath, and sometimes we have to go to 2, 1.5. So we had 45 combines to do a quarter section, and you can't do more than 200 acres, but you got. It's so much material, and you don't want to get the loss. So that's a little bit more intense, I guess.
Land cost that you can purchase.
What's your land cost? Are you renting or purchasing?
I do both. I rent and I own most of the land that I have.
What is it in your area, typically?
In my area, it's picking up. You know, like couple years ago, probably 10 years ago, it was around that $700 an acre, and now it's went up to that $2,000, you know, 25. So it's like everywhere. Yeah. But
What's rent typically in your area?
It's great, you know, like it's around close to that 80 to 100 bucks an acre now, so for the good land, so because some many live, so that's what it is. So that's why my fixed costs, my land cost, my fixed costs is getting pretty high, so that's why I try to push that extra yield to have as much return, because time you pay the rent and pay all the input costs, you know, those extra 5 or 6 or 10 bushels will go a long way.
Find the Liberty Link system or the Roundup Ready system. Which system do you recommend?
Well, I do have some good. If you talk Liberty or Roundup Ready or regular one, you know. So we had good success with any type of canola. So it doesn't. You have to feed your crop accordingly and provide the nutriment. So you could have an Invigor system or a Roundup system or a Clearfield system. Even this year, approve it with a Clearfield system. As long as you manage your wheat properly, it will provide the same yield that you're hoping for than another one. You know, so but it's different hybrid, the different yield potential. There's some early maturing crop hybrid that I see through the years, and as I travel, they won't, even if you apply lots of nitrogen, lots of nutrient, they won't achieve the same than different the same yield potential than different ones. So that's something you have to do selection and talk to the retailer, and you know there's so many gene and so many hybrid that work differently. I see to the year, yeah. But really, to tell one is better than the other, no. It's the wheat control that's the key of the success. You know, if you have competition, you know, half your battle is almost lost. So that's the thing, to try to keep your field clean and with less competition possible. You know. So, yeah. Okay.
Typically, what crop rotation do you follow?
I push my rotation pretty tight, so it could be a cereal crop, so it could be oats or wheat, canola. The one I like the most, that's on my farm, I like the 3 years crop rotation. So let's see, I start one year I grow wheat or oats. The following years I go on a peach double pulse crop, and after that I do on canola. So as long as I got a good compatibility with the herbicide that I use on my peas, because it's good synergy. So if you got a pea stubble and see the canola, I like it on my farm, but you have to be careful of more disease pressure in there. So that's what I found on my farm. So.
I'm going to steal a second for a question. Did I hear you say that on-farm trials are important to your program? Do you do actual on-farm testing, or is it just...
Yeah, I do a lot of on-farm trials. So, and I try lots of products, you know, lots of things, you know, but... I do a lot of farm trials, and I've been blessed to the year we have the, and are you surely welcome to come see what I do on my farm. If it helps you guys, I'm more than willing to show what I do. And if you don't work on the farm, don't work on the farm. But we have people from Alberta, we have people from all over come look what I do. So, and you surely everybody is welcome. Just stop by for coffee. And, yeah, we have some busloads coming, and I show what I do. And not here. Like to, if it helps someone, I'm glad to do it. So it's not, you know, so it's a combination. So yeah.
We have time for a couple more questions. Yeah. Once you get the crop in the bin, how are you conditioning it and managing, making sure that you don't have any losses there?
Well, I see. I've been very fortunate. Like the last couple of years, I know my target. I know my input costs, and I try to lock as much as I can, you know, early off the combine, because there's a high amount of canola that's coming up, and I don't want to lose it all, you know. And through the years, what I found out, that's not me, but what I found out, like with guys, it was producing a good quality seed. I had not much issue to sell it straight off the combine, because a little thing with the balance program, with the split efficient, what I found out, that a good benefit, it's the bushel weight, you know, on canola. So and the oils, oil content. My oil content, like most of the grain buyer, they were saying, because we had a balance problem, my oil content go up to that close to that 50%, and the bushel weight 54. So they like it because it worked out for me. So and it was not hard to go off the combine and sell as much as I want, because they like it for blending power, especially in North we have, because we had sometimes some frozen canola or lighter weight canola. They like it to blend for export. That's what the grain buyer told me. But yeah, one thing what I noticed when you got a good foliar and a good frost program, it matures your crop pretty uniformly. So when I go, I got minimal, you know, I don't go combine. I got some patch green. I got some grain immature that will thrown for eating in the bin, so it's more even, and it's been working for me. So it's but some years, like 2016, I had a tremendous crop, but we had that snowstorm coming in the beginning of October, so there was all tough canola. We had to dry it, I got the heat sensor in my bins, you know, so do it that way. But still, we have to dry, and it was a struggle, you know. So it's coming tough, you know.
Great. We'll take one final question, if anyone has the last question they'd like to ask. No? Oh, great. Thank you, Sean. With so much biomass production, what do you do for residue management?
Well, first, I need a good chopper as much as you can, you know, and That's one factor. And with all that biomass, it could be a struggle. Sometimes we got so much biomass, we have to harrow it a little bit and spread uniformly. So that's a little bit harder work. So today I've been able to manage it. But I really enjoy that biomass, because more biomass down the future will give you more organic matter, as long as you got a good decomposition of that straw, you know. So, yeah.
Great. Thank you, Florian. So just a couple of last points here. One is, I did take a moment to look up the 4R, Pocket Guide to 4R Nutrient Stewardship, and you can actually download it online. So those of you who have your pens out, you can find it at nutrientstewardship.com/, because it's a little tricky to find on the site, /4R, so the number 4, letter R, -pocket-guide. So nutrientstewardship.com/4R-pocket-guide to download that. And I guess just one final thought, if you'll indulge me. So you say the little things are important. Is there one bigger little thing that they can walk away with today to particularly focus on?
Well, one bigger. Well, the one big. Well. They all matter, you know, but the bigger is listen and get as much information you can and try and you feel what works for you. So that's, yeah, so, okay.
Thank you so much, Florian, on behalf of the IJ committee.
Thank you.
Appreciate you joining us.
Oh, thank you.
Thanks for tuning in to the Manitoba Ag Days podcast. We'll see you next year from January 22nd to 24th, 2019.